call to order the Programs, Projects, and Operations Subcommittee meeting, April 6, 2021, 4:00 p.m. Notification of the Open Meetings Act. Let me read a copy of the Open Meetings Act, Nebraska Revised State Statute 84-1407 through 84-1414 is posted on the back wall of the meeting room. Prior to turning to the agenda for today's meeting, I would like to announce the procedure that will be used for this meeting. With respect to each agenda item, directors will first hear staff proposals and recommendations. Then the public will be given the opportunity to speak to the item. Lastly, the directors will discuss the item and take action, and we ask that the public not interrupt the directors' discussion and action. Thank you. I think the next one is quorum call.
Fowler?
Here.
Yeah.
Here.
Sudinski?
Here.
Teaser?
Here.
And
here. Item number four, adoption of agenda.
So moved.
Second.
Motion and second. Roll call.
Jeff?
Yes.
Sudinski?
Yes.
Teaser?
Yes.
Fowler?
Yes.
And Chairperson?
Aye. Got proof of publication of tonight's meeting. Item number six, presentation by Aqua Geo Frameworks of the 2020 Airborne Electromagnetic AEM Mapping and Hydrogeologic Framework, Jared Abraham, AGF, and Paul Weir. Right.
Thank you. Evening, directors. Jared Abraham is here with me tonight. He's the professional geologist with Aqua Geo Frameworks. That helped us through this. A little bit of background, this is a big continuation of what we've previously done in terms of the airborne electromagnetic surveys and what that does. We're not going to go into a lot of background and methodology. We really want to present all the results tonight. So it's really flying over this area with a helicopter, and it helps us identify what are the materials, what are the geologic materials that are beneath the ground surface when we do this. It's in the long run going to help us with mapping all of our aquifers, putting together groundwater models, helping address groundwater quality issues, helping address contamination potential issues from the surface. So the background is we started this. We got I'll talk a little bit more about the Water Sustainability Fund, but that paid for part of it, probably around a third of the total cost. This time we did do a very large area, so let's just look at the diagram that we have up there now. The main areas we're going to talk about, we're going to kind of divide it into a southern region, kind of from Washington County south, or the half of Washington County south, and then a northern region where we did 3 mile recon lines that helped identify that area. You can pick out. And we also have a large margin around our district that I'll talk about. So we're able to not only take all the new line miles that we flew, but then add them to what else was flown before. It gives us a better interpretation that way. From this diagram, you can see the main channel of the Platte River. This is down in Sarpy County. So here's the Platte. Here's the Elkhorn River. The Elkhorn has a lot less gravel material in it. So it's kind of identifiable there. On the very eastern side, this is the Todd Valley over in Saunders County, where it comes down and ties into the Platte River Valley. Some of the main other areas we're going to talk about is called the Arlington Paleo Valley. So we see this large line on this map, basically blue and pink material, is going to be mostly clay and silt, so not necessarily aquifer materials. They form a big backbone along the district, which is kind of one of the things we wanted to talk about and demonstrate when we provide this information eventually to DNR that, hey, we've got a lot of streams and stuff up there that shouldn't necessarily be tied in or hydrologically connected to the Platte Elkhorn River Valley. And then the Paleo Valley system here, an old remnant area, but we found out a lot more about that. We learned a lot of new things about that area as well. So go ahead, Bill. We'll keep moving here. Did I go to the next slide? Oh, yeah. Got it. The objectives then was to look at these different areas and either provide a very detailed survey. You can see in some of those areas the lines were very close together, and in some areas they were further apart. So we wanted a very detailed survey of the Platte River Valley for future modeling work. We wanted a detailed area of the Arlington-Washington County Paleo Channel because it was so intermixed and maybe smaller, it would be hard to define without this additional line, without this additional work. And then basically the rest of the district north of that we hadn't looked at in a lot of detail before, so we flew this three-mile grid, which was the additional area. And then we won't talk about it much, but we did a small area right next to Tecumseh, Nebraska, kind of an additional amount that we'd done before. That was a little bit of detailed work that helps us in their wellhead protection area. So those were the objectives, was to learn more about all those different portions or areas of our district. Overall, the project went exactly as scheduled. We were able to obtain the grant and then get this project identified and signed a contract in February. They were able to get the helicopter and everything arranged and do the actual flights in August of last year. We identified that we were going to include a lot of this data together with the old data. And so that was an amendment we added. But then we did work to get the data delivered. So from that, from the time that they finished flying it, basically in the end of August, to the 1st of February here is how they prepared all this report. And this was a lot of information to go through. So Jared's going to touch on that. Overall, we flew 1,500 new line miles, which was more than what we had totally done before. And then the report, because we compiled all this additional data together, ends up being about 3,500 line miles. So it's a lot of effort to include all this other additional information. So this is just kind of defining what I already talked about a little bit. We're going to look at this in four different sections. One we're calling the Southern Block. It includes the Platte River Valley and the Arlington, Southern Washington County area. We're going to look then specifically at that Arlington area. Then we're also going to look at the northern part of the district and define that. So with that, Jared, why don't you go ahead and go over the rest.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. I'm really honored to be here to speak to you, and it's a real privilege working with you. I started working with the district in 2007 with our first mapping in Ashland. So let's jump right into the southern block area. Just to define this again, Paul already has, some of the main concepts we're seeing here is the thicker materials, the aquifer materials. So this would be your sands and gravels. We see the Platte River system coming through here, and then we see the edge of the Platte Valley right here. So this is our thickest part of the materials in here. So not a real surprise. One of the keys we're looking at is how well are these parts connected? Obviously, Lower Platte North is along here. Your district is here. There's some pretty strong connections in here at the top and at the south. Right, next slide. So the colors are great. How does this compare to what's really happening in real life? What we did is we looked at the specific capacities from the registered well database. So specific capacity is a fancy way of saying how well does that well perform? You know, what kind of water, how much water can you get out of it? And what you see from that is where all the red dots are, those are your good aquifers. Not really a surprise to many people in the room. But the question is how well are we seeing these connections here? I'm going to go back to the previous slide. These are the thicknesses of those aquifers now, where these ties are very strongly illuminated from the airborne and corroborated by the well data in the area. So we felt pretty successful. Let's look at one of these 3Ds. So now we've zoomed in. So what I'd like you guys to do is concentrate on the brown and yellow colors. That's our aquifers. That's what really matters. Again, strong connections down here. This is the Ashland area through here. This was flown in 2007. A lot of this area along the edge of the Top Valley was flown in 2018. And a lot of the new data that we filled in for you guys is 2020. These are your main aquifer systems. As Paul alluded to, the Elkhorn River, right along the bluffs here, we have the basically the blue and tan or pinkish colored. That's not your good aquifer. So we're seeing these relationships in 3D. So it has a much better way of fulfilling the questions that can be answered by groundwater models without just boreholes alone. Let's look at a cross-section here. Same colors, but now I've complicated a little bit. All of this quaternary material or unconsolidated material is sitting on the Cretaceous Dakota group. Well, as a geologist, that's not necessarily our friend so much. And why it's so variable. We have sands, we have sandstones, we have shales, we have silts, we have siltstones, everything mixed together. It's a much more challenging aquifer. But what we're seeing with this information is, where these good aquifers in the Platte Valley, Todd Valley here, we're seeing its connection with the Dakota underlying aquifers. This all spinning off to the east. And then as you move through this, there's the Elkhorn River, the bluffs. Not a lot of good aquifer material here. Where we see the good aquifer material is right at the bottom, underneath these thick till sections. So we'll go into a little more detail what this all shows. I'm going to march down the valley here. Now we're getting towards the end. Look at the strong connection between the Todd Valley and the Platte River system through here. This is your connections, meaning as the water moves through the Todd Valley, it's coming down through that area I showed you in the 3D and ending back up in the Platte River system. So strong ties. Let's look at one of these north-south cross-sections. Again, we're cutting through the system. This is our main aquifer systems, quaternary. This is that Dakota group. And the blue is the undifferentiated Pennsylvania and their older units. These are the limestones and shales that just are not good aquifers in this area. Again, bluffs at the top, move through the system, Elkhorn Rivers, move into the Platte River system, down into the bottom here. So we have a much more improved 3D understanding of the distributions of that and how those materials are sitting on to the Dakota. What we've done with the Dakota is we've kind of split it off into three general types. And I'm careful to say general types. So sand dominant, meaning it's mostly sand versus mostly silt versus mostly clay and shale. And what you see in this is patterns. This is looking at the surface of where some of the sand materials are. Now let's delve into this 3D body of material, and where do we see the most sand-rich material? It's right in here. And the colors represent the thickness of that. Notice in some of these areas, we're not seeing a lot of this very sand-rich material. That doesn't mean there's not aquifers there. It just means that's probably not your best material. So, again, we can start putting the thickness and look at some of these specific capacity numbers right on top of this. And we see a general good agreement. The brighter colors here are the better wells. We see those in the thicker areas. In here, in this area, again, a lot of these wells are the lowest specific capacity number we've calculated, but they are producing some water out here. So it gives you, again, this boundary of where you see changes in the Dakota and how that could impact water quality and water availability.
So even though those are smaller wells, those are domestic wells serving thousands of people surrounding the city. So they're important that we try to find out more about them because that's where people are getting their drinking water.
And their ties, how are they tied together? And that's one of the things we've tried to do with the 3D. The Dakota is a true challenge. Now let's move into this paleo channel. So let's define a paleo channel, an old river system. And what we know from some of the previous literature is that hopefully you guys can see this. There's a dashed black line through here. That's what CSD proposed the paleo channel system to look like. I have that sitting on the thickness of the aquifer and coarse aquifer materials here. And I don't know if you guys can see this. I don't see a channel that goes from west to east through here. I see blotches. Why do we see blotches? And what does that say about the genesis of this channel?
up here at the top, it's thicker, we have thick bludge in here, and then as we move east, there's these areas of axes. We've redefined it with this yellow, light-colored puff in there, refined it a little bit. It's not saying CSD did a good job, it's just we refined it with new data. Now we look at the specific capacity numbers here. This is our ground truth, tells us how well we're doing. Look at the red dots in here. These are some great wells in here. Then we move through here, not so many good wells. Even less through here, have some pockets in here. So what's causing this? Well, a paper, let's move into cross-sections. Again, the yellow is our aquifer materials, the brown and blue are not good, and there's our friend, the Dakota, underneath there. Notice how it's splotchy, but it ties to the Elkhorn River. You move across here. It's not super well connected. There's another profile down here. Again, pieces of this yellow material, but nothing connected. And then this is down the axis of it. Here's the Platte River system. Comes to the bluffs. Again, not super well connected. This is important for water availability, water transport, recharge. And here's a cartoon from a paper I had the privilege of working on with Jesse Corris and others at CSD, where this is a pre-glaciation paleo channel system that was carved on top of the Dakota that has then had areas of it eroded out during the glaciation. And that's exactly what we see in the Arlington Channel. And this has an incredible amount of impact on where their water availability is, recharge, and that's tied to the Elkhorn River. So let's look at the northern grid. So I still want you guys to all focus on the blues and tans are the clays and tills. The yellows and browns are a good aquifer. The green color is, again, the Dakota. And the blue is the Pennsylvania. So blue is not a good aquifer for us. The greens, it can be a good aquifer. And what you see through here is a large zone of this blue and tan material right through here. Let's spin this on its ear and look from the north now. So now we're at the north of the district. We see some other bedrock units coming in here. These happen to be a bit of the Carlisle formation and the green horn. Ternera shell, again, not aquifers. As we look down into the Missouri floodplain, we see those yellows and browns again. Those are floodplain deposits, good aquifers. But right down the backbone, it's all this blue and tan. Well, let's take one of these lines, turn it on its side, and show you what it sort of looks like. So, we've got the north on the right here. We see yellows and browns coming up on the bluffs. There's the Dakota formation, the variable color, so we have sand-rich and not sand-rich materials. But look through the center area. All these vertical lines are boreholes that were done by CSC over the years. And they corroborate our results very well. Thick tills and losses moving down into the valley. The key to this is the backbone of your district is really full of poor aquifer materials. So you're not getting a lot of movement from one side to the other. So where could there be some paleo channels under there? What we've done here is we've turned off all those browns and blues and only looked at the yellow. We see the alluvial plains here. There's our Platte River system over here. We have our paleo channel, Arlington. We see a little bit here. A little bit here of the Oakland area, but not a lot. These are right at the bottom of the system. We don't see any of these large tongue valleys or fluvial systems, paleo channel systems, that go from the west to the east. Here's looking at the Dakota. One of the things we do see is these are the specific capacities in the Dakota formation. So here's our detailed areas. So we see strong patterns. Where the biggest dots are where the Dakota is closely tied to an alluvial system, where you have fresh water available in there and is in the sandstone areas. I'll show some map views of this, which really show where some of this is. Okay, let's look at our bedrock surface. Here's a map, topo map of your district. And you've all seen this. We have a ridge coming down here from north to south. This is what it looks like in the subsurface. The brown areas are your low areas. Much different topography. All these brown areas are these paleochannel systems that used to come to the east prior to the glaciation. That's your bedrock surface. That's what the glacier has been deposited on. On top of that, we have these different sediments. So these plots show all the specific capacities throughout your district and into the lower Elkhorn and other areas we have. Logan Creek here, you see good wells, obviously the Platte, Todd Valley did here. Along the Missouri Plain we have good, but notice there's a marked absence of quaternary good wells in this middle. This middle slide is the mixed wells, where they're both quaternary and Dakota. Again, those are in these areas of mostly where we have sand-rich materials and where we have ties to the alluvial aquifer. On the far right, this is all the Dakota. Notice where the Dakota wells are right in the center area where there's no quaternary. Why are they drilling all the way down to the Dakota? Because there's no other option. There's no hidden gems of aquifer conduits through that backbone of the district. One of the other things that we found through some of the wells that CSD and you guys have drilled and the airborne, we've actually changed the margin of the Dakota here slightly from Burchette's original mapping in the 70s. It's not to say his data was poor, it's just we've added more information. And a lot of the Dakota extends all the way through the Missouri Valley. So that was a new finding. So, recommendations. One of the things that's really challenging us with our Dakota is we need some well-calibrated well logs and potentially NMR logs that really get into the water content that will help to try to deconvolve some of these mysteries we still have. Further aquifer testing in the Dakota. Because, as Paul alluded to, many of the wells are domestic. We don't have a good idea on how much water can move through those materials and how those ties exist that could have impacts. Water quality testing in the Dakota are things that are highly recommended. For the future of the airborne EM, you guys have an amazing picture here. You really don't have a strong need for a lot of more data. Some of the wellhead protection areas where you can define a clear goal, how thick is a clay layer, where does the sand layer go? I think that's a good place for the technology. Areas where future well field development is, that's where you could use potentially some more. Or looking at some of these paleo channels that may cross the area. But again, you are really in a great state of having a good 3D view of your district. So it's an amazing piece of work. So I want to thank you all very much for doing this. More than happy to answer questions. It's a very big report. I know we're giving kind of this 50,000-foot level through it, but I wanted you, again, remember, yellow and brown, good aquifer. If it's blue and tan, it's something clay, not so good. So I want to thank you all for the opportunity to work with you.
Thank you very much. Any questions from directors? Director Fowler?
Jared, quick question. Based on the data sets you have right now, are you able to run any simulations yet, or is it still too premature?
Well, I believe we've given the framework to build those water simulations, and I'll let Paul speak to the other project that we're not part of on doing the groundwater simulations.
Yeah, so we do still have the ongoing project this year of taking all this information, and they have to build layers for a model. So that'll be completed here at the end of this year. So that's
okay.
That's still ongoing, but it's much closer now that we got all this data basically on time and to them ready to do that work.
So I think that'd be important for recharge values and et cetera, that could be kind of useful in the future.
Recharge and the water movement, all that will be defined based on this data.
Jared, how many other states actually have information like this?
You guys are the leader in the country. Number two is North Dakota, and California is three. Texas is probably four. You guys have been doing this for almost 20 years.
It really has changed how we can look at the aquifers, and us as geologists provide useful information to all of you. And one of the things on the simulations, what we strive to do with these colors and these images is you can do some very quick visual inspection. You know, how are things tied from one end to the other? And so without doing an extensive groundwater model, or you may be able to just inspect this, hey, is this an area of concern? Let's look at what our 3D model is and move from there.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Paul, later on, will you be able to tell how fast the water, for example, is going from Platte River Landing to the Elkhorn?
Yeah, through the modeling that we do, we'll be able to find that out. And we'll answer all sorts of other questions we have about well systems. And a lot of this is, again, to help us define more accurately what DNR... DNR has already started the model. We're trying to improve that so that it accurately represents what we think is going on.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Any other questions? Thank you very much, Steve.
Thank you very much. Item number 7, review and recommendation on patio PL 566 site S6, easement vacation for WP2 project. Amanda Grant.
Hi, good afternoon. Bill, can we go to the WP2 map first? So I'll just give you a quick overview. So the WP2 is one of our next flood control reservoirs, kind of on the docket to be built. It's 180th and Giles. We've recently bought some land there. And this is the layout for WP2. If you can see underneath, right where the laser is, that's S6, which is a older NRCS grade stabilization structure. So that was built in 1981, and it's really filled a lot with sediment and done its job. So in the near future, we'll be building WP2 over the top of this, basically removing it and rebuilding it. Bill, can you go to the black and white map? So this is really just kind of a cleanup item. This is WP2 kind of sits up here, the dam, and this is the backwaters of it. And so when, in 1981, when S6 was built, back at the time, the district kind of did these blanket easements, these like, you know, quarter section, or just these kind of overall blanket easements for the flowage and storage of water. And over time, we cleaned them up and actually took what we needed. But for some reason, we didn't get this section cleaned up. And we've actually already purchased this corner of it from, there's a developer that owns this now, so all of the area that would be needed for S6 and even more that's needed for WP2 has been purchased by the district. So this is kind of just a cleanup item to release that old easement so that it doesn't hinder any of this development going on over there. So that's it, unless there's any questions.
We can have a motion.
Motion staff recommendation.
Is anyone from the public wish to speak to this item? Directors?
Basically, we're just giving them the land back. No dollars.
Correct. I don't think that we paid for it in 1981 anyway.
Not seeing any. Roll call.
Spency?
Yes.
Teaser?
Yes.
Collar?
Yes.
Jack?
Yes.
And
Chairperson. Aye. Thank you, Amanda.
Item number 8. Oh, you're up for the next. Review and recommendation of dedication of right-of-way to the City of Papillion and Sharpie County for Cornhusker Road improvements. Amanda?
Another kind of cleanup item here. If you could, Bill, go to the map that has the blue and red. So this is Big Elk Lake. And if you remember, so when we did an interlocal agreement that, you know, says that we would, City Papillion, Sarpy County, the NRD, we would exchange right-of-way for public projects, no cost if we needed to. However, we didn't really set these this Cornisker Road right away, because when we did the interlocal, we didn't have that road paved. We were just grading for it and getting it ready for Sarpy County. So then if you remember towards the end of construction, really, of Big Elk Lake, we had a change order that came to you where Sarpy County paid the entire cost to just complete the paving on Cornisker Road here. So we put that in the contract. The road is done and it's open. So now we're just dedicating the right-of-way. And then when we went to write the legal to dedicate the right-of-way, we realized Papillion has annexed just a part of this Fidelity lot that where we bought land. So part of the road goes to the city of Papillion, and then this blue half over here goes to Sarpy County. So we just have basically two legal descriptions, and the following documents, which we won't go through, are just their standard right-of-way dedication, where we would be dedicating part of this to Papillion and part to Sarpy County. And that's all I have on that, if there's any questions.
Thank you. We can stand for a motion.
I'll move for staff recommendation.
Motion. Get a second?
Second.
Second. Anyone from the public wish to speak to the item? Directors? Director Bratton?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this is sort of off kilter on this, but Octa Keen or Octa asked me about the signage, and that was complete for the original name and how it was pronounced and spelled, Chief Black Elk. Did she ever get a hold of anybody here?
She did. I talked to her last week, and so the sign just went up. If anyone wants to drive by, it's not open yet, and we're planning to have we still have a lot of cleanup and some work that didn't get done before winter, so we're planning to have grand opening late this summer, which I had mentioned her, and of course she would be invited, and she thought that was good timing. There's something else going on with Big Elk this summer too that she had mentioned, and so do you know what that is?
Yes, what was it? It was something they were going to, there's a dedication of Susan Picot statue, but I know for around August, middle August, in the at the Omaha Reservation, they have a big powwow, and it's like 200-plus years in a row powwow, and Kevin, I highly recommend you got to be at that one, so keep your calendar open, maybe any other officials from NRD, but that's what I can think of. But what else they may put, that was part of looking where to put a statue of Chief Big Elk down on the Missouri River, and I'm on the Mayor's Native American Advisory Commission, and there was two spots, and the commission was sort of recommending it be right in front of where the Science Museum was going to be. So if we get that wish, we hope, but that was one of the...
I'm sure that's what she was talking about. So we were going to try to coordinate those openings so that they're that same week or something, which we thought would be kind of nice.
Okay.
So late summer, look for that. But it's nearly complete, but it is not open quite yet.
Any other questions from directors? Roll call.
Caesar?
Yes.
Fowler?
Yes.
Jack?
Yes.
Yes. Aye. Item number 9, review and recommendation of Highway 31 connecting link repair construction contract. Eric Williams.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is the final phase of the restoration of the Mopac Trail after the damages from 2019. Again, we've removed debris, repaired the superstructure, meaning the railing, the substructure, meaning the icebreakers, and now we're going to reconstruct the trail from the Highway 31 parking lot down the hill into the east end of the bridge. Right now the bridge is open from the west end or the south end in Cass County, but remains closed in Sarpy County. So this half-mile stretch of trail will be reconstructed in just a slightly different location based on the damage that was sustained in 2019. The cabins that were previously located there have been removed from the site, and so the alignment will be moved a little bit away from the banks. This went out to bid on March 25th. We received strong bids, 6 of them. 3 were under the engineer's estimate, including the low bid from CDS Enterprise. We have not worked with CDS in the past, nor had JEO, but the engineer on the project contacted the references And all references confirm that CDS has the experience and the equipment and tools necessary to complete the job. So the recommendation is to award the construction contract for the restoration of the Highway 31 connecting link of the Mopac Trail to CDS in the amount of $152,729.
Thank you very much, Eric. We can have a motion.
Move with staff recommendation.
Motion and a second.
Second.
Anyone from the public wish to speak to the item? Directors? Director Jack?
Is this total our cost to do this, or are we getting cost share from someplace else?
There was a FEMA project in the area that we did not pursue at the time, and we implemented the alternative program. We implemented the alternative project program, meaning we received a fixed amount from FEMA for that project, and then it was reallocated to this project. That dollar amount is approximately $275,000, so it should cover the entire cost of both the design and the construction. Our construction cost estimate was about $200,000, so we had good competitive bids, so the combination of the two should still be less than the estimated amount. The remaining amount we would have to document and submit. We have to follow the FEMA guidelines for the alternative program for that remaining amount of funding. There's some bank stabilization type activities we can carry out, but no, this is not coming out of our general budget. This was reimbursed by FEMA from the emergency response
fund. Okay, that's what I thought. Thank you.
Any other questions? Roll call.
Fowler?
Yes.
Jaffe?
Yes.
Teaser?
Yes.
Ed
Jefferson? Aye. Thanks, Eric. Oh, you're up next also. Item number 10, review and recommendation of the FY 2022 Urban Cost Share Programs.
Great, thank you. We sent out the cost share letter this year, and we received applications back in four of the programs. We did not receive any applications in the lake dredging program. There are short summaries of each of the projects listed here, and I'll work through them quickly. We can go into more detail if you have any questions. I believe the information you have has page numbers in the lower right, so I'll try and refer to those as we move through. The first program is the Urban Conservation Assistance Program. First project is from the city of Ralston. This is repair underneath a trail bridge near 84th Street. We evaluated this for either the UCAP program, which it's recommended under, or the trail program. This seemed to make more sense because it is a drainage and erosion repair project. So the recommendation is to assist in the restoration of the support underneath the bridge, do some reconstruction on the concrete, but to help restore the trail surface and avoid future water damage. Second is SID 261 Bellbrook. They have pretty standard channel degradation. This is along Beetle Creek, and they're looking for assistance in restoring the creek. This is very much in line with the guidelines of this program. We recommend approval of this one as well. SID 503 is West Dodge Station. Again, there's erosion on a small tributary. It's an unnamed tributary. And again, this is very much in line with the type of grade stabilization and bank stabilization projects that are designed or that are intended by the guidelines for this program. We recommend cost sharing on this project as well. Last is South Sioux City. South Sioux City Drainage Way from 18th to 29th Street. Documentation on this project was submitted originally under the Urban Drainage Way Program, but in review of the scope of work and the total cost of the project, we recommend that this be moved over to the Urban Conservation Assistance Program. Their application was for $30,600. This would mean $30,000 flat, which is the cap in the program. This is a vegetation clearing and debris removal type of activity, so it's not really a channel restoration or improvement type of project, so it matches better to this program than the Urban Drainage Way program. So we recommend moving over here. The information about the original submittal is included in the packet, and so if you have any questions about that program or that project, we can answer those as well. This particular project, it is possible that we have cost shared on some work in this location in the past. We'll be doing some investigation, and if there is an existing operations and maintenance agreement that would prohibit us from cost sharing, we would not include this project in the budget. And we'll discuss that with South Sioux City. So those four projects are recommended for cost sharing and would be included in the budget for the Urban Conservation Assistance Program. And would you like to take action on each program independently?
Well, we could. Is that what the board wants to do?
Take it as a whole.
Take it as a whole. Okay, we'll take it as a whole.
Great. I'll continue.
Hey, Eric, I had a question, though.
Yes, sir.
These four that we're listing here, are they the only four that applied, or are they only four that qualified?
There were additional projects. I had some conversations with the applicants. One was withdrawn. One was transferred to the Urban Drainage Way Program. I think those are the other two that were in this program. So that information is not included here, again, because it was requested to be removed by the SID and moved to the other program.
Okay.
That's right. Okay. The second program is the Urban Drainage Way Program. I think this is on page 25, if you're looking for the information that supports it. This is generally intended to be kind of a longer stretch of a creek with a little bit more comprehensive work to be done. Bill, if you could skip to page 25. The first program is from the City of Papillion. I'd like to take a look at the... Yep. So there's an error with this page of the PDF. Papillion apologizes for that confusion. If you can skip to the next page, we'll take a look at the map. This is the vicinity. This is a small, unnamed tributary in an area just north of the water tower. It's draining northeast. The creek eventually goes into a pipe and runs up to the West Papio Creek. One more page, please. This project is reconstruction of the degradation in the channel, protection of sanitary infrastructure as well as the roadway. And I have discussed with Papillion the potential for trail to be included if the agricultural land to the south is platted for development. We would talk to them about the connection from Tremble Park over to 84th Street, and we would make sure to incorporate that as we do the coordination on the design in this location. The total expected cost right now is $1.8 million. They requested assistance at level 2, which is 60%. That does require an application to the 319 program, as well as the Nebraska Environmental Trust, which Papillion has indicated they will do. And so the recommendation is that we include this in our budget and divide this over 2 years. So that would be $540,000 in each of the next two fiscal years. A project like this generally takes that amount of time. We would also look at an interlocal agreement to cover the total cost share amount. We would ask Papillion to help provide a little bit more detail, and that interlocal agreement would come back sometime over the next couple months. And then that would be done prior to the finalization of the budget. So there will be additional time for discussion and verification of the details of this project prior to the final approval. The Urban Drainage Way Program generally has larger projects than the Urban Conservation Assistance Program. That's why the dollar amount here is quite a lot larger than the last few projects that we saw. This is a more comprehensive repair and restoration type of project. The second project recommended under this program is on page 29. Director Japp, this is one that was originally submitted under the Urban Conservation Assistance Program from SID 541. So the document you can see here is the UCAP application. In looking at the type of work that would be done here, this was previously submitted by the City of Omaha Public Works Department. They were working with the SID to come up with a solution to protect the sanitary infrastructure in the area as well as the channel. This is draining to the north and then kind of back to the east eventually into the Big Papio Creek. And the design here calls for a couple of weir structures to protect two crossings of the neighborhood sanitary. I believe it's an 8-inch sanitary pipe that crosses a couple times. This channel has had a lot of trouble. The SID and Public Works are trying to come up with a combined solution that both stabilizes and protects now, and then also keeps things in good shape so that when this is eventually annexed or expected to be annexed by the City of Omaha, it doesn't leave ongoing problems for Public Works to take care of in the future. This was originally submitted into the Urban Conservation Assistance Program. You can see the dollar amount on page 29 in your packet was requested at $30,000. We thought that was not a correct application. The scope of the work here, as you can tell from the total expected cost of the project, was significantly larger, and the implications to the infrastructure in the area were more significant than the Urban Conservation Assistance Program. So I met with the engineer, Bob, last week and talked about this location. And we agreed to recommend it under the Urban Drainage Way Program with the condition that the engineer will meet with us and with Public Works to make some updates to the design to make sure that it is stable long-term to protect the infrastructure, because this is likely to be annexed in the near future. and we want to avoid cost sharing on a project that doesn't actually address the long-term stormwater and other infrastructure needs in the area. So the recommendation on this project is to switch it to the Urban Drainage Way Program. The expected changes to the weir structures, we believe that the total project cost would likely increase to about $450,000, and we recommended that the restoration or the lowest cost share amount, which is 40%, and that would be $180,000 of cost share for the two structures and the channel work in this area. So we expect a meeting with both the SID engineer and the City of Omaha Public Works Department probably in the next 2 weeks. So we should have more information by the time we go into budgeting in May and June about whether or not they have found agreement about this project being in the best interest of the city long term. And we would like to facilitate having a good outcome so that we don't have continually degrading infrastructure over time. Those are the only two projects that are recommended here. We did receive another application, but we did not recommend it. We did not believe it was in line with the guidelines for the program and the previous discussions that we've had here.
Eric, I think Jim had a question.
On the first project, Papillion, how long has that been going on, that problem that we're going to try and fix?
I don't know a specific time. I mean, the area to the south is undeveloped, so for a while. I don't know when the neighborhood to the north was originally developed. I'm sorry.
So this is an anticipation of development? We're just going to make it pretty, make it fix?
Nope, it's possible that the land to the south would be developed. I mean, it's unusual that it hasn't been yet. I'm not sure if there's a particular reason why it hasn't. But this is mostly a response to degradation from the infrastructure that meets the needs on the north side. I think that's where the sanitary sewers come from. And I think Papillion recognizes they can do this type of comprehensive stream work now, but if the land to the south develops, it would be much more difficult to go back in and make this type of correction later, because the setback distance here would be relatively narrow, probably only that 3 to 1 plus 20. So I think they're trying to be proactive in protecting what's there now rather than waiting and having to do a more complicated and expensive project in the future.
I'm hoping I'm not hearing, let's make it better for future development.
Correct. Yeah. This
we are not doing that.
Correct. I mean, we are prepared in the event that anything would. I mean, we want to make sure that it would accommodate any other future uses. But this is not intended to be specifically in line with any new development. There is no plat that has been submitted. We don't know of anything there. It just seems likely based on the location from the map on the previous page. You can see, Bill, if you skip back one, you can see that the yellow area is the incorporated area and the white area is not. And so it's a little uncertain why this area has not developed yet. But this is not this.
I'm looking at Kevin. He knows what's going to happen in this area. But you don't have to answer that.
No, it's just sitting empty and it has been forever.
Yeah.
I know of no plan to develop that corner.
Right.
I wish it would, actually, but.
So I guess. So what's the urgency to get this done?
50 years.
Yeah. I think Papillion recognizes that they have projects that need to be accomplished, and the City of Bellevue has even more projects, and I think they are so far behind in several of their drainage ways that they find a hard time catching up. I think Papillion has the ability to be a little more proactive in addressing kind of one per year. Right. They did the Terra Hills drainage way cost share application 2 years ago and completed that project. I think they're moving on to another location that they recognize if they don't take action now, it will just get worse.
So I guess if this gets approved, it's all subject to budget when we approve our budget in July, September.
Correct.
So,
sure.
Same topic, but I got another question.
Oh, go ahead. I can wait.
Okay. The second project, SID 541, is that a new subdivision, a new SID?
I don't know the timeline on that one. No, I don't think so, because, again, the City of Omaha submitted a cost share application on that. There has been some back and forth between the SID and the city as to who is responsible for this. Omaha has concluded that the SID is responsible. So the local portion of the cost share will come directly from the SID in this example. But it's been around, that SID has been around long enough that Omaha had already identified and wanted to address the problem because at the time of annexation, they could have more serious issues.
A couple years ago, we had a situation, SID just wanted to make their stream through their place look pretty. Tell me this is not that situation.
No, you can't see the map.
Tell me the truth, of course.
Yep, you can't see it on the map, but there are two sanitary crossings that are currently exposed by a few feet. So the pipe is just kind of hanging in the air, and that represents a pretty significant risk. I think Omaha wanted to address it. That's why they had applied, because if something managed to damage that pipe, an exposed sanitary that is not designed to be aerial can freeze. And if it were to break, you would end up with your sanitary running into your stream, and that's a significant permit violation for Omaha in their stormwater permits.
So based on our criteria, even though it's a sanitary sewer, which we try not to get involved in, this kind of meets our criteria?
That would be the public infrastructure that is being protected. We won't do any, there won't be any action taken on the sanitary itself. It would be to kind of refill over the sanitary and then establish a drop structure that would prevent future damage to that infrastructure. But it's not any work on the sanitary itself. It's just to protect.
Okay, so this portion is exclusive of dealing with the sewage?
That's right. Okay. It's over the top of the sewer, but it doesn't touch the sewer itself.
Director.
Who is ultimately responsible for a sanitary sewer system that's going across the creek like that? Is the NRD responsible for that?
No. Either the SID or the city once it's annexed. And if it's at a time when it's possible that they may be annexed, that's when it gets into this kind of back and forth about should the SID take that on now and get it addressed, or do they want to leave it and then Omaha would be responsible for it eventually. And there's some debate back and forth about which entity is responsible, and this is one of those cases, which is why Omaha had previously submitted a project that ended up not moving forward. So it is not our responsibility. The fact that sanitary sewers are located in channels which are degrading is why we have had so much discussion about policy update in both the Papio and Sarpy watershed programs, because this type of consequence continues to happen. And so from the stormwater side, we are trying to avoid stormwater damaging public infrastructure and having policies that protect against that. This is a reactive, corrective project rather than the proactive policy update that we're trying in other locations.
Okay.
Next item, Eric.
The next program is the Recreation Area Development Program, beginning on page 33. I'll go kind of quickly. There are several of these. We believe that last year the applications were due right at the beginning of the COVID pandemic, and so we had very significantly fewer applications. We have very significantly more applications this year. The Village of Arlington has submitted for a dog park. From the next page, you can see this is in the area of the ball fields, and we'll talk about that again in a second. They have kind of a comprehensive recreation and natural resources concept planned in this area, but this is to use some kind of residential space on the south side of the street for a public facility, a dog park. The second project is also from Arlington. This is a pond. A couple more. Yep, there we go. And one more. All right, so this is the same ball fields. The pond would be on the east side there, kind of beyond the outfield near the ball fields. If you scroll down, you can see that the pond is just north of there's the southern portion of the recreation fields area, and then that road is the same road where the dog park would be on the south side. So they are looking at kind of comprehensive projects in this area that would all work together. The dog park, the pond would be excavated. And then you can see kind of around, and we'll talk about it in a little while, a network of trail connectivity from the backside of the ball fields kind of around this whole area. So this request is for cost share towards the construction of the pond, a new recreation and natural resources feature in the area of the current sports fields. Next, on page 41, the city of Bellevue has requested assistance with a bicycle share program from Heartland B-Cycle, very similar to what we have here and what the City of Papillion has at 84th Street. Especially last year and with the upgrade of the electric bikes here, the B-Cycle program has been extremely popular. Bellevue would like to install a B-Cycle location at the 36th Street trailhead on West Papio Trail, kind of right by the Keystone Trail. We've talked with them about this for a number of years. They had some challenges incorporating this into their budget at one point. They have now refocused and have the local cost share covered, and so they have requested cost share on this recreation feature on the trail network, which we have constructed and helped to maintain with them. It's a good collaboration based on the existing system that we have partnered to build and maintain over. Page 45. The City of Blair has requested assistance with boat dock replacements. And if you, let's see, I think if you skip to page four, I'm sorry, the fourth page on this, that'd be 48. There you go. You can see they have two boat docks, and both would be repaired here. There was damage to these. These facilities, as indicated by their description, are shared by Game and Parks, USGS, Corps of Engineers, Fish and Wildlife, Local Fire and Rescue. And so it is both a recreation facility as well as a public agency access point on the river. The request in this one, the total cost is $201,250. The program guidelines indicate $50,000 as the maximum NRD cost share, and the City of Blair has requested an increase above the program guidelines per policy to $100,000 cost share. We have mentioned this in the past, that the program guidelines have been the same for quite a while costs have gone up. And so in this case, the recommendation is for the $100,000 of cost share here, which is outside of the program policy guidelines.
So what?
What does that mean? Is that just something we want to get in the habit of doing, or do we need to change the policy, or what do we need to do?
I do think that we generally try not to address the policy at the time when the projects are recommended for consideration, but we may bring a policy update in the future. We need to evaluate whether or not the cost of projects has escaped the potential cost share that we're providing now. Again, if you look back, the Arlington Ponds total cost was $485,000.
Yeah.
Our cap is 50%, but $50,000 is nowhere near 50% of that project. It's 10%. So it is possible we might recommend a policy update in the future. We have not had another specific request for cost share above the policy guidelines in the last 7 years that I've been here, so it hasn't been a problem to date, but we may want to discuss that and maybe have an informational discussion at a board meeting and discuss a policy update at some time in the future. But at this one, we would probably, I think it is mentioned in the memo that this is specifically outside of the program policy, so we just wanted to make sure and document this would be a variance to the policy, and we'll make sure and document that if that's what the board would like to do.
So our policy allows us to go above with board approval.
Yeah. Okay. You can have a variance in your policy.
Okay.
And Blair specifically requested, because we worked with Blair, and we told him it's $50,000, can we do a standalone or can we do a part of the program? We thought it would be best to stick with the program, but request a variance from the board to allow that.
Follows the line. If we have a policy at $50,000, why would you waive it because of, it should be changed anyway? I've got nothing against the project. But if we have the policy, shouldn't we consider changing the policy?
Well, the applicant requested it, so we're requesting the board can deny it. But the applicant said, can you request a variance in your policy on a specific item? And we said, yes, we would. Now, ultimately, it's up to you to do that. But if we want to change the policy, then that's a separate.
That's a whole other deal, yeah.
Yeah.
My per diem hasn't gone up for 30 years. How far do we go on this?
So the applicant requested, or you can say, no, an applicant would come back with a standalone item to say, will you contribute to this program? Okay.
Thank you.
Did you have a question?
Going back to the Arlington, the pond by the baseball fields?
Yes.
How's that pond going to get filled?
How's it going to be built? I think they just intend from the... Phil. Honestly, I don't know. I think that this is... I don't think we have a larger map included in your information, but I think that this is near the river. Someone help me out here? I'm not as familiar with the area. We limited some of the material that was submitted because of... we received hundreds of pages of applications. So I think... I don't know if this is able to be filled through groundwater or if they will have to pump this.
I'd still like to know.
We can certainly look into that.
It's a real low area right there, and so I think it's kind of swampy to begin with.
Right. I think that's why they've proposed the pond, is that they...
I was going to ask, is that supposed to help drain the ball fields? Because if they get a heavy rain, those things are underwater, so...
Yeah, it's probably a drain. We can ask. I think it's a drainage issue because it is wet most of the time.
Yeah.
So it'll be rainwater, it'll be groundwater, and it might not be consistent, obviously, level, but I think it's there mostly to take care of an issue that's just a probably big mosquito nest now. And to take drainage off of the field. That's my guess, but we'll verify.
Eric?
Okay. Yep, if we can keep going forward, we had let's see, the Bellevue project, so whatever is next. Gretna Crossing, I'm sorry, Blair was last. Gretna Crossing Park on page 49. Gretna has a master plan for a comprehensive recreation and natural resources area, and this is kind of an early phase. They're looking to have multiple phases of this over time. If you go to the, if you look at the cost share request here, I'm sorry. As we talked about before, the total estimated cost here is $586,000. The total available funding is only $50,000. So this is another project that is significantly outside of what we are able to provide. They do have funding that would help them with this, but it is, again, a highlight that there are projects that are significantly more expensive than I think when we wrote the guidelines. Next page, please. Can you zoom out? It's a very large map. This page in your handout is the comprehensive view of all of the features that they look to construct over several years, and the natural area and the pollinator habitat is in the very upper right. And so the cost for the project that's listed here is only for the natural space, the 13-acre pollinator park in the upper right, and then they will move through other phases, I think several phases, and we may hear from them again as they get to kind of the fishing pond, the trails, some of the other natural spaces in this comprehensive development that they're working on. But this is an early phase, and the cost share is only for specifically the pollinator park natural area in the northeast corner. Next project is from kind of a combined effort from the Lake Cunningham Development Trust and the City of Omaha. The Lake Cunningham is at a Corps of Engineers dam, one of the four large projects originally constructed by the Corps of Engineers. The land is owned by the Corps, and then there's an agreement for the City of Omaha to maintain the recreation facilities around the lake as a public park. The city now has an agreement with the Lake Cunningham Development Trust for operations and construction of new recreation facilities for public use, as well as operations and maintenance of those facilities for the next 10 years, with a potential extension of 5 years after that. And so the applicant is the Lake Cunningham Development Trust, and I believe the trail application that they also submitted has some documentation about the interlocal agreement between the private foundation and the public agency. I mention that because our recreation cost share program specifically is for public agencies, meaning cities and counties, villages. This is not a public agency, but it is a public-private partnership, as indicated by the documentation a little bit later, that is extremely close to the intended reason why public agencies were listed as the only eligible applicants. It will be maintained in similar guidelines, similar hours of operation, similar access, and similar operations and maintenance practices to the rest of the City of Omaha Parks network. And so while a private trust is looking to help fundraise, carry out the construction, and then see these projects operated and maintained, it is not specifically with the City of Omaha. I just mentioned that because, again, it is a slight variance from the program policy, because the applicant is a private organization. Hmm. But this is for, if you skip a couple pages forward, there are some maps. There are existing features that were constructed a few decades ago. A small shelter, that's B on the map. A larger shelter, which is a little lower in the map, that's listed as A. C there is the porta potty structure. If you skip to the next map, D is a parking lot, which is not an eligible recreation area development expense, so that's been removed from the recommended total. And E, another small structure, and F, a pump house. So those are the recreation program eligible improvements to the facilities. So the recommendation is for $46,000, which is slightly different than what was on the application because we removed the cost of the ineligible parking lot features from this recommendation.
Jim, you had a question.
Again, notwithstanding merits of the project, they're private. Let's go ahead and do this for a private private institution. Where do we draw the line? I mean, if we start doing this with our waiver of the policy throughout the district, what are the private institutions that we're potentially facing with this program? more of a statement than a...
Yep. We have had applications from non-public agencies under the Recreation Area Program, including this year, and they were not eligible because it wasn't...
So is this one eligible because it's Brook Bench?
This one is eligible because of the public-private partnership documentation from the interlocal agreement with the City of Omaha, which, again, is listed under the Trails application that they also submitted. So we could skip to that now if you'd like to see that documentation. Let me see if I can find that page for you.
But I don't see it. As a matter of fact, it says, see attached project description for more detail. All we have is a quote from a lawn company.
Yep, that's, I'm sorry. Like I said, there are two different projects. We included the documentation only once. If you go to page 90, that's in the Trails program, but it's the same documentation. Back one more page, I'm sorry. Yeah, so here is a letter from the mayor of Omaha talking about the public-private partnership and the relationship.
Which page is that on?
Page 90. So, yeah, this describes the relationship between the city and the Corps of Engineers, and then the city and the Lake Cunningham Trust. And then the next page is the documentation of the approval of the operations and maintenance agreement. We provided only the letter from the mayor, the legislative chamber cover, and the first page of the operations and maintenance agreement. They did submit the entire 110 pages of the agreement, which can be made available if you would like. The intention here is to highlight that there is, the City of Omaha does agree to maintain this facility if the trust does not carry out the operations and maintenance. And that's specifically why we felt this was in line with the, or close to the program guidelines, because the city has agreed to take responsibility in the event that the trust does not carry out the operations and maintenance that are necessary for the public facility. Yeah, they have essentially delegated that responsibility to another party. We will ask that both the foundation and the City of Omaha sign the operations and maintenance agreements. That would verify that the city understands that they would be responsible in the event that the trust does not carry out what we generally expect for recreation facilities.
Thank you.
So this is the same between the two projects. I'm sorry, the documentation was only in there once.
Okay. Larry?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can you give us some names of humans that are on the Lake Cunningham Development Trust board?
I don't know their board members. We can look that up if you'd like.
Please, but for Thursday. And I have something else to say about that one. I will say that the particular... Oh, once this is all completed, I wanted to make sure that the Papillon, Missouri River NRD has signage, or that we are included in whatever signage that's going to go up around there for the buildings and the... If the full board even approves it, the trail connections and all that good stuff. But I will say, for those of you that don't know, Lake Cunningham, on the south side of Lake Cunningham, that field was sold, and there's just bulldozers going all through it, and it's already just being Irvington right through there, that it's all development just going everywhere, so that there's going to be a big demand for people to, you know, get at this particular area.
That's a requisite of the agreements that we sign, where that they sign the project with our,
yep,
our signage that we're sponsors.
And I did a site visit for both of these projects with Brook Bench, and they are moving forward. They have done a lot of work there. These are kind of two of the very last pieces they would like to have done in time for the opening later this summer. We are invited to the celebration of the opening when that comes up.
Let me know.
We would be recognized as a partner if we do choose to participate here. So they understand that our support would be very much appreciated, and they would include us in all of that.
Thank you.
Just a note, I think you're going to see more in the future these types of arrangements with trusts and with private entities and with public bodies. As budgets get stretched thinner and thinner, I think you'll see those type of things come. And this may be just the beginning, where you'll see public entities reach out to maybe someone like we do here for the Corps. We manage and operate this facility, although they constructed it. So you may see, I think, more trusts and those types of things established to try to spread the pain of those long-term, not only maintenance, but improvements in facilities. So And Cunningham Lake has been neglected for a very long time. And I think the city had to find a solution for it. And this was something that was offered to them, and they took advantage of it. So.
We are working in a kind of a comprehensive way, as you said. The Keystone Trail connection into Cunningham from the south side is something we're working with the Parks Department on planning. So I agree that there will be a significant increase in demand for this facility once it's all completed, and then hopefully the trail will be there as well.
Was Brooke Bench still around, or I thought he retired? Or
He did retire, yes.
Doing a good
one
job.
Or the other. All right, we want some names of those on that trust.
Probably only one name.
Go ahead.
The next project is Brown Park improvements from the City of Omaha. They listed a number of costs toward kind of comprehensive. This is on page 57. They listed a number of costs for kind of comprehensive park upgrades. If you look at the last map, it's kind of the closest view of the park. About three pages down. There you go. Oh. So, yeah, some trail facilities, just kind of comprehensive park upgrades here. They did document $425,000 as the total estimated cost, but recognizing that only a small portion of that would be eligible, estimated $40,000, they've requested $20,000 from us towards eligible costs as defined by the program guidelines. So kudos to them for recognizing that not all of their features are eligible under our program guidelines. The next project is a kayak launch at Flanagan Lake, submitted by the City of Omaha. I think we're familiar with the location of this project. I think this is a similar type of kayak launch that they have considered at Standing Bear. And there's a picture of what the type of facility will look like. I think that there is an increase in desire, increase in use of kayaks at lots of facilities around town. And this is one of the locations where I was out there over the weekends, and there were a couple kayaks. The only way to access the facility would be to walk down the boat ramp carrying the kayak, which is not really safe for anyone. So you can see there's a dock with a kind of floating panel dock, similar to what was done at the Standing Bear Floating Trail, with kind of a dual-end kayak launch, much safer for the users, much safer for the people at the boat ramp as well. So an improvement all the way around. The next project is from the City of Papillion on page 65. This is the Monarch Place Playground refurbishment. This is another park that has been in need of some upgrades for quite a while. They list it as a 40-year-old playground. It is on Cedardale, east of 72nd Street. I've been to this park. It does need upgrades. And we recommend cost sharing on the installation of the new play equipment at this park. That there's a picture on page 68, a couple pages forward, and this is what they expect to install. So this would be the new facility that they would install at this existing park. The next project is from South Sioux City at the Jeffrey Dibble Soccer facility. They would like to put a shelter in there. This is specifically covered by the program guidelines, shelters at recreation facilities. The cost here is $36,403. They've asked for half, is $18,201. No additional comments here. Skip forward a couple, Bill. Page 73, that concludes the Recreation Area Development Program cost share applications. As you asked earlier, Director Japp, there were some projects that were not eligible. One from the South Sioux City that was not within the guidelines of the program. It was a swimming pool improvement that is not covered by the natural resources guidelines of our program. And another one from the Dakota Thurston Fair. They are not a public agency, and there was some confusion about whether or not they were a public agency. So they are not officially operated by the county, so they were not eligible under that one. So
okay.
If we would like to talk about that more in the future, we'd be glad to do that, but not a public agency. I believe those are the only two that were not recommended from the application.
Are they part of a trust?
They are not.
They have an agreement with the county.
Right, yeah.
It must have some correlation there somewhere along the line.
And that's why it was confusing, because they listed it specifically as Dakota Thurston County, and I believe that to be part of the county. It is not part of the county. It is a separate organization. The county does not have responsibility for it long term.
Okay, thank you.
The next program in the last program is the Trails Assistance Program. First project is from Arlington. If you skip forward 3 pages to 76, you'll see a familiar map. I believe it's actually just the same map. They have, again, the same firm doing the work here. I think they intend to do all of this at the same time. This time focus on the 6-foot walking path around the pond from the back of the ball fields, continuing south down to Ellsworth Street. And then again, on the south side of Ellsworth Street is where the dog park is. So they're looking at kind of comprehensive upgrades to the entire entire area. And good job on them to collaborate, you know, or to coordinate those projects together. I think that will help them see some cost savings. The requested amount there is half of $185,000, is $92,500. The city of Fort Calhoun is working on a similar type of comprehensive park and trail upgrade. This phase is the Adams—I'm sorry—the 10-foot-wide trail on Adams Street Park. Is a project description, and then here is kind of the comprehensive set of projects that they're looking at completing. They're looking at the bike trail now on the east side of the park, and then the north side of the park. And I believe from the south, you can see that it continues. I don't know the name of the street, but it continues to the east, the southeast corner there. So again, they are looking to have kind of access to the park from a couple different directions. Comprehensive work here over a couple of years. And again, good work following their master plan, and this is in line with our guidelines for cost share for the Trails Assistance Program. Total cost, $144,200, requesting $72,100 for this project. Next is Applewood Creek Trail, submitted by the City of La Vista. We have spoken with the City of La Vista about this project over a number of years. This is a federal aid project, so you'll see the total estimated cost at $2.5 million. The request is $250,000. This isn't as common anymore. The federal aid project is an 80-20 split, 80% federal, 20% local, and then we have cost shared at half of the local, so 10% of the total project cost, which is where those numbers come from. If you skip forward to page 86, you can see a map. Up there it was. There is an existing trail to the very north end of the map. The red section is a new trail to be constructed down and across Brentwood Drive. If you scroll down to the south portion of the map, the major feature in this project is at about 103rd Street and Giles Road. That blue is a new culvert crossing underneath of existing Giles Street. That's why this project is so expensive. There is kind of no way to cross Giles. It is a very large arterial 5-lane road, not safe for people to walk or ride across. They are proposing a culvert crossing underneath. There is an existing trail on the south side listed as SID 276, and this would cross under and then construct the trail north across Brentwood all the way up to the SID 237 trail at the very far northeast. A little further south, we are working to connect this section to the West Papio Trail, so it's part of a comprehensive regional type of program, and we're glad to keep working with La Vista on moving this project forward. I apologize, I missed earlier. There was an application from SID 276 on the Urban Conservation Assistance Program. We have connected, well, we will be connecting them with the City of La Vista. If you scroll to the bottom of the map, the request was for stabilization in the creek where this trail would be constructed. We recommended that they not move forward with that project because the trail construction will impact that specific location. They should do the creek stabilization after the trail is constructed. So that's one more application that was not recommended to move forward this time, specifically because of this project, which will also have impact in the same location. On page 87, this is the second application I mentioned earlier from the Lake Cunningham Development Trust in collaboration with the City of Omaha. This is for the three small sections of trail. If you skip to page 89, there is one map that shows, zoom out a little, all three locations. The trail runs essentially around the entire lake. Similar to most of the large dam site recreation facilities, except in three small locations. The small piece on the east is kind of near the boat ramp. You can take the trail almost entirely around the lake, but on the east side you have to get off the trail and ride or walk or run directly on the road where the boat ramp users would be driving. Again, not safe for either type of user. The trail continues down across the dam, which is the large flat piece at the south side of the water heading to the southwest. There's a gap again where currently users would cross onto the road and take the road north up to the next trail location, so a gap there that needs to be filled to help separate the users. And then one more similar location up kind of by the, if you just scroll up to the top half of the map, by the location for the recreation facilities listed as the QLI trail. And so that that short gap is another place where trail users would otherwise have to use the road, but they can use the this trail would help them to be separate from the vehicles who might be driving in the area. So the total expected cost here was listed at about $400,000. They had a quote that was $385,000. I did get an email from Brooke Bench. They expect the cost of the two projects to be less than what was expected in the applications, but the recommended amount here was $200,000. And as we move into budgeting, if we have updated numbers, we would decrease that in our budget according to the most recently available information. So this would close the loop around the entire Lake Cunningham trail, and this is, again, expected to see a lot of use when the facility opens to the public.
Jim?
I think Larry and I are going to ask the same question. Is this one of those that's about time we got this one done?
I think that most of the rest of the lake has seen the trail upgrade from asphalt to concrete. It had been in bad shape. I think it was constructed when the lake was built in maybe the 70s. Yeah. So, yes, I would say this facility has been in need of upgrade for a very long time. These are kind of the last pieces that they would like to get done prior to the big opening that they have planned this summer. I think this is an excellent improvement to help keep all the both trail and other users at the park safe when it does open.
Larry?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And the trail will go all the way around the lake?
Yes. The cost share request here is only for the three small missing pieces that have not yet been constructed. Previous design said it's okay, just have the trail users use the road. There is no shoulder, there is no sidewalk, there is no curb and gutter even. You are just on the asphalt surface of the road. So it's not very safe for trail users out there.
Well, and if you remember, myself and Councilman Festerson, it's like we were banging the side of metal trash cans to get everybody's attention, I mean figuratively speaking, to try to get them to direct funding the city of Omaha to get them moving on that, and I guess they finally did, and that's finally, and then we'll leave it at that. And then I wanted to please remind me, Arlington, what county is Arlington in?
Washington.
So I guess if the cost sharing, is the Washington County Board doing any of that cost sharing on these projects? Does anyone know?
City of Arlington.
Yeah, I think just the Village of Arlington is the other side. I think they must have privately raised some of the funding for this. Again, the cost of the pond seems high, and we're only providing a small amount.
And if anybody, not to be too facetious, but to let the board members of the Washington County Board know, hey, you know, look, we're helping out. If the full board votes that way on Thursday, but... You know. Just that. Thanks, Eric.
If we, 1 second, please. I'm trying to find my page again. The next page, 93. The City of Omaha. This is listed as Big Papio Trail FEMA restoration. This trail was damaged in 2019 based on a large rain event that caused the flooding. There is FEMA funding here. You can see the total estimated cost, $524,000, but the request is only $43,000. Only a small portion of this is separate from the FEMA recovery and response funding and eligible under our general guidelines. They are going to move the trail up higher on the bank underneath of West Dodge Road, which, if anyone has used that trail in that location, it has a perpetual erosion problem from the road drainage on the top of West Dodge Road down onto the trail. This is an improvement that we recommended when we did some technical review of the FEMA restoration plans. The city is now asking for our cost share assistance to help carry out that improvement to the trail. I believe it's an alternate bid for the construction, so if they do not have the funding, they would just reconstruct the trail in the same location that has had the damage in the past. We would recommend making the trail improvement now because there will be a construction contractor on site. That will be a very cost-effective way to make this improvement that the city has wanted to make for quite a while and that we think is a good improvement. The map shows the comprehensive damage that was sustained across the Big Papio Trail in 2019. All of this is covered by the FEMA emergency declaration funding. We're only talking about the section up by West Dodge Road toward the upper left portion of the map. There is more detail available if you'd like to see it. We have a copy of the entire plan set, but only a small portion of this is eligible and requested. The next project on page 97 is also from the City of Omaha. This is referred to as the North Downtown Riverfront Pedestrian Bridge, sometimes referred to as the Baby Bob Bridge. This is the extension, if you go to page 2. The extension of the Bob Carey Pedestrian Bridge, so here's kind of a reminder of the location. Scroll down a little bit. The box shows where you are. You can see the Bob Carey Pedestrian Bridge over the river. It has kind of a pigtail, curly Q, loop down and round and back under the bridge. This would extend from the elevated location of the trail across the railroad tracks, which is the kind of vertical line up and down in the middle, which currently separates most of the riverfront from most of the rest of the downtown recreation development, entertainment district, including the CenturyLink and TD Ameritrade. The project would connect off of the Bob Carey Bridge, under the OPPD transmission line, over the railroad line, and then land just south of where the word project area is, at the northeast corner of the 10th Street intersection with Mike Fahey. So it would come right down into the parking lot, which is part of the kind of walking plaza in the area of TD and CenturyLink. This project has been under design for several years. I've attended conceptual planning design meetings over a long period. This also has federal funding. Almost all of the funding is accounted for now, and the city is asking us for a contribution to help finalize the project and move it from the ongoing design phase to construction. Total expected cost is $7.7 million. A good portion of that is from federal funding. There is also City of Omaha money included, as well as private contribution. The request is for $750,000. In order to avoid that being a large single lump in our budget, we've recommended that that be distributed over 3 years at $250,000 a year. We'd recommend an interlocal to cover that reimbursement to the City of Omaha be approved. We would bring that forward in a couple months. But this would continue the work that we helped to support on the original pedestrian bridge, and this is a kind of prestige natural resources recreation area in our community. It's on all the postcards. We think this is a great expansion to help provide a lot more access to the river from the locations where many tens of thousands of people come every year for the World Series and other events. And one second. I think there's one more project, page 103. Riverfront Trail Phase 4, which probably sounds familiar. We have received and reviewed and approved cost share on this, I believe, a couple times in the past. This project had federal funding, and at the time it included, if you skip to the next page, it included a trail that went around Levi Carter Park. That section has been removed. The federal funding has been returned and redelegated over to the Bob Carey Bridge project. So now this project is the connection from at the south end, the existing trail near Abbott Drive and the river along the dotted line on the west side up to Locust Street and connecting into the trail, which goes into Levi Carter Park. This has been in the works for a very, very long time, and we would like to see this project completed. We do get comments about this pretty regularly because people walk, run, and ride along Abbott Drive toward the airport, which is very unsafe. So having this project complete would be a big improvement to the trail network. Very glad to see this. This is moving to hopefully bid and construction in 2022, I believe. I'm sorry, there is one more project on page 107. Alphabetically, it's last on SID 405 Deer Creek.
Eric, before we go on.
Yes.
This is that we've been waiting for the feds for 15 years. This is that project.
It is. There was back and forth about the wetlands for a very, very long time. The final answer was send the federal money somewhere else, build a project locally, and that's where we're at now. So this should be very much faster.
For the members, this is the length that we've been waiting for a long, long time to do for the Riverfront Trail. This gets us up to Dodge Park and up to Boyer Chute and everything. So this is extremely significant, in my opinion. Thanks.
I agree. Last project's from Deer Creek, which is an SID around 120th north of West Dodge. The maps, if you skip to the next page, the maps are from an original design that was submitted, as far as I know, when the SID was being developed. A little difficult to see the arrow points up and left there. So this is on the left bank or the east side. That's Military Road, which you can see at the creek crossing bridge there. So this trail would extend from Military North on the east side, the left bank up, across that little drainage way, under 126th Street, if you go to the next page. Continuing along that same left bank, around the golf course area here, that's listed as wetlands, and one more page. And then up to, I think it's about 132nd Street would be the end. And so this is this area was designated as a potential trail location when the SID was developed, and you can see that there are outlots in the property lines. There are sanitary sewer easements there. This one we are recommending for inclusion in the budget, but with the understanding that we would spend time talking with the SID, the City Parks Planning and Public Works Departments. This is part of the corridor from Tranquility up to Bennington, which is about 7 miles. There is kind of a conceptual plan of connecting the Big Papio Trail that entire length, but we haven't done the study to know which side of the creek is the right location for the trail, when that might be prioritized, or what adjacent public infrastructure projects might need to be done. If you go back two pages, Bill, you can see a couple of these. The undercrossing at 126th Street and then the stream on the left side are two examples that we would want to coordinate with Public Works, because as improvements like the Military Road Bridge might be upgraded, we want to make sure that the trail is incorporated there. Sanitary crossings at any of the streams. We might want to talk with Public Works about grade control structures. So this is a pretty preliminary project right now. The engineer for the SID asked us to include this. We think that it is potentially a good project. It needs more investigation. And so the approval would be contingent on coordination with all three departments at the city to make sure that this is the correct location. Quite frankly, the trail might be better suited on the other side of the creek. We don't know. That's one of the things we need to investigate early on. So we told them that this is probably a good project long term. It seems like maybe it needs a little additional work, but does seem like a good project, and so we would put it on the list this year because it meets the program guidelines.
Kevin?
Eric, I would only ask, you know, for the size of the cost share, that they provide some halfway decent maps so we can see exactly what it is.
Yeah.
That's possible in your further investigation, you know, you said.
Yes, absolutely.
All right, thank you.
Jim, you have any questions?
No, it's a significant amount of our, it's a third of our cost share dollars, so I just want to point that out to the board.
It is possible that through preliminary discussions, likely in April and May, that this may not be either the right side of the creek or the right time for this project to move forward. We're uncertain about that. It is, again, within the program guidelines, which is why it's recommended. But the engineer understands that we need to have those discussions with the three other departments to make sure that this is the right answer for this location.
And we want to make sure that they spend this amount of time. So we don't want to approve it and then it sits for 3 years in our budget. So if they cannot guarantee that this will be spent in this fiscal year, then we'll probably take it off and have them reapply. So because there's no reason sitting on $500,000 for 3 or 4 years in this budget. We've been very diligent in trying to get these carryovers taken off and not letting them sit for years on end. So if this makes it into the budget, we know they're going to do it. If not, we'll take it out in the first draft.
And really call it wetlands. I mean, I've lost a lot of golf balls with those wetlands over the years.
Yes, you have.
That gets back to Kevin's question. Come on, let's get real.
Rick? I'll move acceptance of all the projects described by staff. And that's good enough.
Need a second for that. We get a second?
Second.
Anyone from the public wish to speak to any of this? Directors? And this will come back before us and during budget time anyway. So, yes.
I realize last year was a unique year, but how did the dollar amounts compare this time to like 2 years ago or 3 years ago and so forth?
Generally, we see about $2 million of cost share requested under the program. Sometimes that is over a multi-year period. Last year, we saw about $800,000. I think the total amount of the applications was about $3.5 million. By looking at multi-year funding on a couple of those, that would decrease our expense in FY 2022. So I think the amount is under $3 million, maybe $2.5 million this year. So somewhat higher than we would have seen in 2019 in previous, but not substantially different.
So it's $3,016,286 for this year. And so I always look at these programs because of the – so the estimated works, so we're contributing about 17% of the total project cost, and it's over $18 million in projects. So we're leveraging $3 million for $18 million worth of work. As it stands right now, again, some of these may fall off or whatever. But, yeah, we're a little over $2 million, it seems, average over the past, not discounting last year because it was an anomaly. So it's a little high, but not significant. But I think the overall project total is higher than has been in the past.
And you said our budget is averaging approximately how much for this?
About a little over $2 million for all these projects. So I think over the past probably 10 years it's been – it fluctuates up and down Marlin around there. And so, what shocked me is the project total. So what we're contributing, we're getting, or the community's getting over $18 million in facilities and work. So that's a pretty good cost benefit.
Any other questions? Roll call.
Jack?
Yes.
Sabinski?
Yes.
Teaser?
Yes.
Hi. And we're adjourned.
Anybody need a break?
Yep.
Okay, 5 minutes. Everyone, we'll call the FEL subcommittee meeting to order. I'm asking Fred, Director Conley, to fill in for Director Davidson, who had to leave. Notification Open Meeting Act is posted on the back wall. With that, quorum call.
Conley?
Here.
Bradley?
Here.
McCormick?
Here.
Chairperson?
Here. Adoption of the agenda?
Move.
Second.
Who made the motion?
Bradley. I made the second.
Bradley?
Yes.
McCormick?
Yes.
Conley?
Aye.
Chairperson?
Yes. I have before me proof of publication. At this time, I'd like to have a motion to go into executive session to review the land rights for the Elk Creek levee repairs, as well as item 7, review and recommendation land acquisition of West Australian Regional Basin, WP1.
So moved.
Second.
Roll call.
McCormick?
Yes.
Conley?
Aye.
Bradley?
Yes.
Chairperson?
Yes. We are, roll call, please.
Aye.
Bradley?
Yes.
Kermit?
Yes.
Yes. We have item 6, review recommendation of land rights, Elk Creek levee repairs. And we have 3 different motions. A Nelson Tract Elk Creek levee repair project recommendation that the subcommittee recommend to the board that the GM be authorized to execute a purchase agreement with Doug and Lisa Nelson and James and Christian Nelson Revocable Living Trust for a not to exceed amount of $49,482 for an area of 4.29 acres of land and temporary easement right of way for Elk Creek Repair Project, subject to changes deemed necessary by the GM and approval to form by District Legal Counsel.
I'm motion to approve.
A second.
Second.
Okay. Discussion? Roll call.
Bradley?
Yes.
McCormick?
Yes.
Aye.
Yes. Item 2, Hell Trash Elk Creek Levee Repair Project Recommendation Subcommittee recommends that the Board of Directors GM be authorized to execute a purchase agreement with Consuela Hall for a not to exceed amount of $29,606 for an area containing 3.21 acres of land and a temporary easement right away for the Elk Creek Levee Repair Project, subject to changes deemed necessary by the GM and approval by form by District Legal Counsel.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Discussion? Roll call.
Yes.
Company?
Aye.
Yes. Roost Track Elk Creek Library Repair Project Recommendation Subcommittee to recommend to the Board of Directors that GM be authorized to execute purchase agreement for Darlene L. Roost Irrevocable Trust for a not to exceed amount of $54,403 for an area containing 6.18 acres of land and a temporary easement right of way for the Elk Creek Library Repair Project, subject changes deemed necessary by the GM and approval to form by District Legal Counsel.
Motion to lay over to next meeting.
Second.
No, what?
We want approval to.
Yeah.
Oh, in case he does.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry, I withdraw that.
You have a second?
Second.
Okay, any discussion? Roll call, please.
McCartney? Yes.
Bradley?
Yes.
Yes. Item number 7. Recommendation management be recommends the subcommittee is to the board that the GM be authorized to execute a purchase agreement with Harlan J. Dreesen for the purchase of 38.48 acres of construction of WP1 Regional Detention Basin Project for a total amount of $2,809,040, subject to such other terms and conditions as the GM manager. The GM determines necessary and legal counsel approves as to form.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Any further discussion? Roll call.
Bradley?
Yes.
McCormick?
Yes.
Conley? Aye. Jefferson? Yes. That concludes our agenda, ladies and gentlemen.